This podcast was recorded on Thursday, January 24th at 10:40 a.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like when and if he ever gives his State of the Union address, President Trump will admit, you know, the State of the Union is pretty messed up.
And I'm sure the Democratic response will agree. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters who shrewdly cultivate the body politic here in the Buckeye State. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. This week, Sherrod Brown books his flight to Iowa and New Hampshire, and Democrats in the Ohio House might not have much power, but they do have a new leadership team, and it's a historic one. But first...
That is our plan. Border security, DACA, TPS, and many other things. Straightforward, fair, reasonable, and common sense.
That is, of course, President Trump speaking last weekend about his offer to end the government shutdown. He says he's willing to give so-called Dreamers a 3-year extension, as well as 3 years of temporary protected status, or TPS, as he mentioned there, to people from countries ravaged by war or disaster. Sounds like a pretty good compromise, right?
Wrong, at least according to Democrats. The reason the shutdown is now more than a month old is President Trump still wants his wall along the southern border. Speaker Nancy Pelosi, though, says he's not going to get it.
Another reason why the government shutdown is on day 34, I believe.
That's about right.
I'm losing count. It's on 34, Steve. It's because it is just a partial shutdown. It affects Washington, D.C. in a huge way, no doubt. But here in Ohio, not so much, unless, of course, you're a federal employee or a federal contractor or a company that does business with the federal government.
And there are some of those here, certainly. Here are the numbers. About 7,000 federal workers in Ohio are furloughed. That's a lot of people. And they are about to miss their second paycheck. So try paying rent or your mortgage without getting paid for a month.
But Ohio has 5.7 million workers. So if you do the math, 7,000 federal workers amounts to about 0.1% of the Ohio workforce. And there you can see how, you know, as bad as it is for those folks, the impact on the overall economy is limited.
But like you say, it is bad for those folks. If you're a furloughed worker or a worker on the job not getting paid, it is a big deal. Here to talk about that is Joe Maley. He's the president of the local union that represents employees at the federal prison in Elkton in eastern Ohio. Joe Maley, welcome to Snollygoster.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm sorry that the situation is affecting you and your workers. Federal corrections officers, essential personnel who have to work, but they're not getting paid right now. How is the morale up there in the prison?
The morale is pretty low right now, to be honest with you. You know, some people, they just see this as just us not being paid for 30 days, but the federal workers have been under attack probably for the past, 3 to 4 years now.
You can even say 3 to 4 decades if you want to say by some politicians, Joe. So what are you having to do to pay your bills? You having to dip into savings, charge stuff on your credit card?
Me personally, we're putting our bills, with the bills that we can, we're putting on our credit card, trying to save our liquid assets as much as possible because there's no end in sight so far. So, we're pretty much having to do that, prioritize our bills, try to figure out which bills need to be paid, you know, immediately, like our lights and heat and, you know, my car note so I can get back and forth to work because I'm being forced to work. Mm-hmm. And I'm still being forced to put gas in my gas tank to go back and forth to work because if I refuse, then I can be fired.
So you can't call off like we've seen a lot of TSA members do. You can't call in sick as kind of a sort of protest.
No. We're not allowed to do any sort of striking or a sicken or whatever it is that some people are labeling it. However, there are workers now that are going to be requesting to actually be put on furlough status so they can actually either collect unemployment or they can go out and get a second job because they just can't afford to keep going back and forth to work and paying child care and paying gas. It's cheaper for them to go on furlough knowing that eventually, hopefully, at some point, they will get that back pay, but at least this way they can have some form of income to assist them in taking care of their kids. It's cheaper for them to watch their own kids because they can't afford daycare. It's cheaper for them to stay at home and not spend the money for gas, so maybe their wife can go back and forth to work or their husband can go back and forth to work. But I also have members that both parents work at the federal prison. So they have $0 coming in, and this is going to be the second paycheck that they're missing. So one of those might have to end up staying at home and requesting furlough status. So it's terrible. What's happening is terrible. And not only is it terrible, but it's against the law. This was filed on in 2013. The judge ruled in our favor. It is against the law. They have to pay us at least our minimum wage plus our overtime, which they are not, obviously, because we're not getting paid anything. And to be in all honesty, it's like a form of modern-day slavery. We're being forced to work without a wage. So, you know, it's terrible, or else we get fired.
How does requesting furloughs work? How many folks can get a furlough? Is it based on seniority? How does it work?
That would be based on the security and safety of the institution. The CEO, which would be the warden, would have to make that determination.
That was my next question. What does that do to your safety as an employee of this prison and the safety of the inmates who also rely on you folks to keep them safe?
Absolutely. I mean, but, you know, at some point, like I was saying, you know, each individual employee has their financial breaking point. And, you know, when they get to that point, you know, then they're going to have to do what they have to do to best serve their family. I mean, they have families that they have to think about. You know, they don't have the luxury of just, you know, we're not millionaires and billionaires. Mm-hmm. We live paycheck to paycheck, just like any other red-blooded American, and they have to figure out a way to provide for their family. And if that's going on furlough, which, you know, all my workers there, they all love their jobs, but at some point, you know, they got to do what's best for themselves and their family.
Is there any kind of fund that the union has to help members? I know that's, you know, some unions have that when you go out on strike, that, you know, there's a fund that everybody pitches in for, kind of a rainy day fund. This is not the same, obviously. This is not a strike. But is there anything like that?
No, because like I stated before, since we're not allowed to strike and we're not allowed to have any type of, you know, sick ends or sick, you know, sick
no,
out
no
or whatever.
No funds available.
You know, we don't, our membership dues don't cover enough for us to actually be able to significantly help our members. Like, you know, there may be something we could do here in the future where we try to give back a little bit, like send a gift card or something of that nature, but nothing that is going to be significant to really help them or to, you know, supplant their income in any way.
You know, Elkton's a pretty small town up there near Youngstown. What's the impact on the local economy, the impact on restaurants, on coffee shops, other local businesses?
I mean, I would assume the impact is great. You know, we do spend a lot of our money, you know, in the Boardman, you know, Youngstown, Canton, Alliance area. Not only that, but I have members that travel 2 hours from West Virginia. I have members that travel from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I have members that travel from Cleveland, Ohio, Canton, Ohio. So all those economies are impacted, not just the ones down this way, you know, in the small town of Lisbon.
Mm-hmm. Joe, who do you blame? Do you blame the Democrats? Do you blame President Trump?
I really don't get into the politics portion of it. You know, we have to be careful what we say. There is something called the Hatch Act. But I can tell you this. We, at this point, they really don't care whose fault it is. There's enough blame to go around on both sides. All we want is to be paid. Just pay us and then figure out all the rest of that stuff later, because that's, you know, as far as the border wall is concerned or whatever, we have nothing to do with that. We're not in the decision-making process, although we're the ones being hurt, essentially, by this shutdown. You know, we're the ones that actually are feeling the effects. They're not feeling the effects. They're still getting paid on a daily or a weekly or a monthly basis. You know, they don't feel the same effect that we do. And like I said, you know, the average federal employee only makes around $40,000 a year. So, you know, in today's economy, that's not a lot of money, you know, so we live paycheck to paycheck.
I know you don't want to get to politics. I certainly understand that. But, you know, as we said at the top of this podcast, for folks who aren't federal employees, the impact of the shutdown has been fairly minimal. You might have longer lines at the airport because some TSA agents have called in sick, but it's been fairly minimal. Should the law, you mentioned the law requires you to get paid some amount, which you say has not been met. But should the law change that even essential workers don't have to show up if the government shuts down. There has to be some kind of incentive for Congress and the president to keep the government running. Would you agree? Some kind of legal incentive.
Yeah, I would agree. However, I think to the extent as the law, we do have a 13th Amendment. We don't force slavery in this country, whether it be political slavery, whether it be financial slavery, or governmental slavery. So I think that the laws are there. I think that we need to abide by the law. And if someone works and gives you a fair day's work, pay them their fair day's wage. That has to be a top priority. Even when this government opens up, we can't forget this. We have to move forward and ensure that there's a law in place that says if the government does shut down those essential staff, we're going to set aside this fund to ensure that they continually get paid and that they can use their leave. Because what's happening now, in my mind, an interpretation is unconstitutional. And I will say this. I did also listen to the top of your podcast, and I find it very interesting that all those things that was talked about by our boss, the President of the United States, and not one mention of the federal workers that are being hurt day in, day out because of the shutdown. So that kind of not only bothers me, I'm sure, but those federal employees that are out there and that are hurting, that aren't working, so they can't get a paycheck, and those federal employees that are continuing to work and create bills for themselves by working and are getting a paycheck.
Well, Joe, that's certainly why we wanted to have you on the podcast, to offer that perspective.
Joe, one more question. I mean, you will get paid eventually.
Right.
What should there be interest tacked on to this? Because you're having to pay credit card interest, but you will get paid eventually. I mean,
Right. And there's interest, like you said, so now I have to pay interest on a loan or a credit card for things that I have no business actually putting on those because of something that's happening to me that's out of my control. You know, I do hear that somewhat from, other, citizens and people that I talk to, and they say, well, eventually you're going to get paid, right? And I'm like, oh, yeah, so how about this? How about you give me your paycheck, and then when the government opens up, then I'll pay you back, and you go to work every single day without a paycheck. So, you know, it's almost like that old adage, you know, it's not worth one hamburger today to get five hamburgers tomorrow because I'm not feeding my family now. That money does me no good if you're going to give it to me a year from now. Mm-hmm. I need my paycheck now, just like everybody else does.
Well, Joe, we certainly appreciate your perspective, and best of luck to you and all your members going forward. Joe Maley is the president of the local union that represents employees at the federal prison in Elkton in eastern Ohio. Joe, thanks again.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys taking out the time to talk to me.
Sherrod Brown sure looks like he is running for president. He has had a week that would make John Kasich jealous. This week, he has appeared on The Rachel Maddow Show, Morning Joe, both on MSNBC. And Wednesday night, he was on Late Night with Seth Meyers.
You mentioned Dignity of Work. You are right now on a Dignity of Work tour. I would like to note that a lot of the places you're going are sort of early primary states. Should we take anything from that?
My wife and I are thinking about a campaign for president. And too many Democrats look at, I think, the electorate as either campaign to the progressive base or you campaign and talk to working class voters. You've got to do both. You've got to do both to win the heartland. And, you know, it really is. I mean, if we decide not to do this, and it's going to be a joint decision with my wife, Connie Schultz, and me after we do this Dignity of Work listening tour, I'm hopeful that whoever the Democratic candidate is will put work at the center of their campaign.
So, the Dignity of Work tour. I wonder if they have T-shirts, you know, the ones with the tour dates on the back, you know, Cleveland, January 31st.
I'm imagining
Des Moines, February 1st.
I'm imagining Sherrod holding a lighter in the air right now as we speak. The best part of that discussion, honestly, because what we just heard was pretty boilerplate. It's what he's been saying for a couple of weeks now. The best part was when Seth Meyers listed some of the adjectives and phrases that have been used to describe Sherrod Brown: unvarnished, unpolished, gritty, always disheveled, radiates rumpledness, and Mr. Uncharisma.
Last one's a bit harsh.
It is a bit harsh.
I think he was
because he's a charismatic guy. He's a funny, nice guy.
He's not Rob Portman. You know?
That's good. As far as charisma, that's good.
I mean, Rob Portman's an excellent public servant, don't get me wrong, but he's just not as charismatic as...
He is Mr. Uncharisma.
Yeah, so he's not as charismatic as Kamala Harris. But anyway, it's gritty, disheveled. I think Brown would take that. You know, it's his,
yeah, he liked those. He liked unpolished.
Brand. Yeah, he's on message, preaching that dignity of work. Whether you punch a clock, Steve, whether you swipe a badge, whether you work for tips or care for the kids or the elderly... You're going to hear that over and over again.
Whether you're from Gahanna, Akron, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Middletown. Now, the field is it's getting crowded. You should say the field of candidates is really crowded. And it's honestly threatening to violate martial fire law capacity laws. It's a really crowded field.
You're going to have to ask candidates to leave the building because there's too many people there. You know, let's go down the list. Kamala Harris announced she's running this week. She announced on Martin Luther King Day. So here's a list of who is actually running or potentially running, officially potentially running. Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, Kirsten Gillibrand, Julian Castro, Tulsi Gabbard, Pete Buttigieg, John Delaney, Richard Ojeda, Andrew Yang, okay? Still waiting for their decision. Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, Beto O'Rourke, Amy Klobuchar, Terry McAuliffe, Cory Booker, Michael Bloomberg, Steve Bullock, Eric Garcetti, John Hickenlooper, and don't forget... Hillary Clinton, and of course, Sherrod Brown. 21 names.
That's a lot of names.
Yes. Some hard to pronounce.
I mean, that's going to start ramping up now. You're going to start to see those incredibly crowded debate stages on CNN, on MSNBC. It's going to be a very crowded field, at least for the few months.
I can't see all these
first
folks.
First few months.
I can't see all these folks actually continuing all the way until
Hillary
the
Clinton. Hillary Clinton is not running for president. I don't.
Until she says no, I'm going to keep her name on that
I
list.
I know, but she's not running. I mean, other than that, yeah, I think all these people are possibilities. Certainly, the first half of people they've already declared, or they have exploratory committees, yeah, which consist of a bunch of interns, like just reading polls.
I think, speaking of those polls, Joe Biden is the clear leader in most polls right now. I think it all comes down to him. If he decides to run, I think you're going to see folks like Sherrod Brown say, you know what, I'm going to pass. Because I think Sherrod Brown and Joe Biden...
A lot of crossover there.
Yeah. I think they're basically the same candidate. And Joe Biden, I think, would you know, probably beat Sherrod Brown just based on name ID and likability and things like that, and ability to raise money, first and foremost. So I think Joe Biden, if he runs, that will change the field. If he doesn't run, then I think it's still wide open.
Republicans in the Ohio House have a supermajority. They can do just about whatever they want because they have such an advantage in raw numbers.
But as we saw with the recent election of House Speaker Larry Householder, Democrats can affect at least some decisions, and they have a new leader.
They do. The House Democratic Caucus this week picked Amelia Sykes to be the party's minority leader. She's a young African-American representative from Akron who's seen as a rising star in the party. She says she is taking the job with what I would call reasonable expectations.
We don't expect that we are going to run the Ohio House of Representatives with the numbers the way that they are, but we do expect at the very least to be heard and listened to.
They want to be heard and listened to. We have had women leaders in the House before, but this is the first time a majority of a leadership team will be made up of women.
Mm-hmm. Rounding out the Democratic House leadership team are Kristen Boggs of Columbus, Kent Smith of Euclid, and freshman Paula Hicks Hudson, the former mayor of Toledo. All talented legislators, and I wish them luck with the GOP-controlled House and Larry Householder because they are going to need it.
A freshman on the leadership team, that's
she's a former mayor of Toledo.
Yeah, but still, you think if you're going to be a leader at the state house, you have to have at least 2 years under your belt. So
good luck with Householder.
Yeah.
And that will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster. We're putting off our Snollygoster of the Week segment because it seems everybody was pretty much on their best behavior this week, or maybe they were all furloughed. I don't know what it was, but we didn't have a clear Snollygoster of the Week.
Well, you could always say that Donald Trump and or Nancy Pelosi is the Snollygoster of the Week, mm-hmm, but that would get boring.
That would get boring. But we'll have one for you next week. Until then, be sure to leave us a good review on iTunes. Tell your friends about us. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster on WOSU Public Media.